the VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 314, recorded on June 24th, 2013. And welcome to the 314th edition of the TV Gaming Podcast and a 146th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Jordan Lund.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes listener feedback. Now, I have to start this podcast. Well, there's two things I have to say. One, the other podcast we recorded, but it was craptastic. I don't know what happened. It just sounded awful. But on the other hand, it may adjust as well because, like it always happens, if we record a podcast on Sunday, something happens during the week that makes everything that we talked about irrelevant.
Yep, that's true.
Irrelevant. So it was actually, you know, a lucky thing. The other thing is very sad news. Now, I don't know if anybody listening to this podcast knew Knuckles Dawson, David Drager. He was best known. He actually started working for Rooster Teeth, but he also did a podcast with me a long time ago, actually before the Video Game Roundtable. And his body was found, and was really heartbreaking was that he closed all of his accounts, his Twitter account, his Skype account, and all that stuff. He left a YouTube video on his official site, a scene from Dumb and Dumber, in which the character played by Jim Carrey just says, "Well, see you later," in a really goofy way. And you know what happens when someone closes all their accounts and says their goodbyes and all that, and they're found dead in the park after leaving their wallet, their keys, and everything else behind, that it was an obvious suicide. So it hit me hard because, you know, I knew him and I met him several times. I played Rock Band with him. And a lot of people in the Xbox 360 community are heartbroken over this. So, farewell, Knuckles Dawson. And he will always have the record for having the most achievements. He had a streak in which he had an achievement per day for well over a year. Think about that for a second. And he didn't cheat. It wasn't like he had easy achievements, and if there was a bad day, you know, he would just, "Oh, f*** it. I'll do this really easy game to get achievement from." No, he did it the hard way. So, anyways, this is just a shout-out to David Drager, who lived in Vancouver. So, we missed the podcast. well, we didn't miss the podcast, but the podcast was irrelevant.
Well, it was you going on about how wrong you are about the Xbox One, but that's okay.
Actually, I turned out to be right. But here's what happened is that we actually did a live show that was televised in which we discussed the events of what happened. And what happened was that Microsoft decided, you know what, okay, you can play offline, you know, you can rent movies, you can do all these games. And rather than rehash it right now, I'm just going to re-air everything that was discussed on that episode. Because,
and I prefer to think of it as Microsoft coming back to their senses.
Okay, so here's the episode.
Hello.
Hey.
Oh, hi, Jordan.
So, hey, there you are.
You missed the... Are you watching on the stream?
No, I just got off a train.
Okay, so I don't know if how much of the particulars do you know of the reversal that that Microsoft did on the Xbox One?
I know that they pretty much reversed everything. Okay. The only thing that they said that they were not going to reverse was the price.
And also Kinect. Here are the exact changes, which I just read out to everybody else, so I might as well, you know. No more always online requirement. The console no longer has to check in every 24 hours. All game discs work on the Xbox One as they do on the Xbox 360. Authentication is no longer necessary. An internet connection is only required when initially setting up the console. All downloaded games will function the same, either online or offline. No additional restrictions on trading games or loaning discs. And region locks have been dropped. And that was the biggest surprise to me. Were you expecting them to make the Xbox One region-free?
I did not expect a region-free box, no. And that's going to be interesting to see how that works, because I predict everybody in Australia is going to start importing their games now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I just realized that. So while they'll have to spend a fortune on the Xbox One itself, So what did you think when I actually texted you and said, "Oh, by the way, Microsoft did a complete 180. And by the way, one of the funniest things is they're now calling the Xbox One the Xbox 180.
Yes, the Xbox 180 is the kind of the punchline. You know, I thought it was funny. I don't know. You know, there's a fine line between laughing with this and laughing at us. I think there's a little bit of both going on when it comes to the Xbox 180.
Well, you're gonna find this hilarious. Well, for one thing, GameFly is ecstatic, as you might well.
GameFly, Redbox, everybody has to. Well, and I think you mentioned that GameStop's stock went up 6%.
It went up 6%, which is hilarious to me.
That's a huge gain.
I mean, just that reminded me of Square Enix's dropping when, you know, the investor said, "I'm going to sell all my shares because of Final Fantasy XIV." You know,
it was a necessary statement on Microsoft's behalf. I feel bad that it came a couple of days after the whole Angry Joe interview with Major Nelson. Did you see that?
No, but you know what? What's interesting is that when I texted you, said, "Well, the PS4 the pre-orders are 2-1 right now." According to IGN, that is now reversed.
Ah, okay.
Now everybody is pre-ordering the Xbox One, and I told you this on the podcast that people wanted Microsoft to do something. They had a vested interest, it seemed, begging them to do it.
And I told you that's why people were so angry, is that this was a betrayal of everything that gaming is about.
Well,
there was a huge amount of interest. I was interested myself until Microsoft said what they were going to do. Now I'm more interested now that they've flipped it back around.
Right.
I'm still cautious, though, because I don't trust them at this point.
Why?
They could get 5 million sold and then flip all the restrictions.
No, I don't think I think that's the case. Now, one of the interesting things is that Sony got out of this has nothing to do with the PS4, because at E3, after all the PS4 announcements and all that stuff, the one console that actually received a big jump in interest and sales was the Vita.
Yeah, Sony made a point of talking about how the Vita was designed for the PS4, and so the PS4 really came out of E3 well, and that bled over to the Vita as well.
The problem here, though, is that it's sort of like, you know, well, you got the Vita, now what? You know, it's
well,
like...
Well, and the thing of it is that, you know, having support for every PlayStation 4 game on the Vita is fantastic. As a Vita owner, I fully endorse that.
But
as a Vita owner, I also realize that means I'm never going to get another Vita game. You know, why on earth would a developer put the time and effort into making a Vita exclusive game? Well, they could turn out a PS4 game, and it works on the Vita, too.
Yeah, I mean, a Vita PSN game. The other thing that I found interesting E3 is that the new Xbox Super Slim, that's a misnomer. It's the same size as the Slim.
It's the same size as... It's in a slightly
and it's worse.
Modified case.
And it's a little bit worse.
Know?
Because not only does it cost the same... But they removed the optical part of the Xbox S, you know, so you don't have that anymore. So you actually have a value loss. And the thing that annoys me is that they're selling it for $250. Why not have a $150 Xbox 360 now? I mean, you have the brand new hotness coming out. You know, I'm looking to get a new... My current 360 is finally starting to... And it has nothing to do with Red Rings or anything like that. It's just getting old, you know?
Both my 360 and my PS3 are showing their age, yeah.
And the thing is that the Xbox 360, the Slim, not the Super Slim, but the Slim, well, the Super Slim 2, has a much larger hard drive, you know?
Right.
And that's, you know, and that's where I'm probably, if I'm going to get a new 360, I'm just going to get a Slim, not the Super Slim, because there's no point. That was a big screw-up on Microsoft's part. They had a big opportunity to, you know... If you're going to resell a console, you know, and do what PlayStation does, you know, remember the PlayStation, you had the PlayStation 1, you had the PlayStation, they actually named it something else.
The PlayStation TWO, yeah.
Yeah, and they kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller, you know, that's what Microsoft should be doing with the Xbox 360. I am still astounded that Microsoft has not entertained the idea of having a portable Xbox One. It would sell. I mean, you have Pac-Man selling as a portable, so I'm pretty sure if you had Xbox One Halo with multiplayer. People would buy it. Remember all these?
You're talking about the original Xbox.
The original Xbox, yes. One. I mean, but the graphics of the original Xbox One will look good on a 2-inch screen.
That's true.
You know, and the thing is that, you know, when remember how freaked out people got when they learned that there was a Halo version on the DS? Remember there?
Yeah.
There was actually a version of Halo being developed for the DS. People wanted that, you know?
They did, and that turned out to be a fan project, though. That wasn't an actual
developer. It was a pretty damn good one.
Yeah. No, now, it was a very good project.
The other thing that I'm thinking of right now are things that we're losing because they're going to this. The one thing that I really liked was that if on the old system, if you bought a game, you'd automatically have a code for a digital version of that game that you didn't need a disc for. You know, you don't have to use a disc and it's digital, which is why you could play it anywhere. You know,
they could do that through the achievements.
That's
right?
No longer
you buy
possible.
A game, you play the disc, you get an achievement, and that proves you own the game.
No, because I have games that I rented from GameFly that I have achievements for. I don't own the game. It's impossible now. You have to have the disc in the system now. Now, the family share is gone, but who cares? Because that entire thing was making up for the fact that you just couldn't bring a disc and put it in someone's system. Now you just have to bring the disc, you know.
Yeah.
The other
being
thing
able
is...
Being able to hand you or mail you a disc is fine.
Yeah. The other thing that is lost, which I actually liked, was the fact, you know... Well, it wasn't lost. You still have the cloud. And the cloud is going to be heavily used for stuff like multiplayer games and Netflix and all that, right? But there's less incentive for developers to use the cloud for single-player games now.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, I think the whole notion of the cloud saves and stuff, I mean, we've got that on the current generation, so that's going to get expanded.
Yeah, but you know what? You actually have the entire games onto the cloud. That's why Microsoft shelled out for 300,000 servers.
Exactly.
I'm going to tell you something, though. you're going to have the fastest online gameplay through Xbox One games. I don't think you'll ever see Xbox Live slowdowns now that the Xbox single-player cloud is gone.
They say 300,000 servers. They mean 300,000 virtual servers. We don't know how many physical servers that is.
Well, the thing is, they were building it so that, if one part of you could never have Xbox Live totally going down, which is something it was mandatory if you're going to use the must be online, you know, or the online check, because you better have online always, you know. If something goes down, it better be the reason because of your ISP, not because of Microsoft.
Right.
And we're back. One of the interesting things is that Microsoft's been getting backlash from the other side because so many people lost a lot of features that they wanted. And I was thinking, you know, if you can put your family and friends to 10 people, that means every game that they sell that's put on the cloud is actually 1/10 of, it diminishes by 10 if you do all of them, you know. It's like you sell one game and 10 people own it.
Well, the way the cloud works is that you just have one copy of every game in the cloud and then you license it out to whoever has properly licensed it. You still have to download it to the local machine in order to play it. You wouldn't be able to play it from the cloud. The internet connection's not fast enough.
Yeah, but you know what? I think your thoughts are, and I think we mentioned it on the episode that, you know, well, you guess you'll just have to trade around discs again. Just, you know.
Exactly, and there's nothing wrong with that, and that's the way it always should be.
Well, the thing is, the problem the real problem for you wasn't that, you know, 10 people would have, what you had a problem was that once you gave away a game and it was registered on someone else's computer, you couldn't get it back again. That was
correct.
Your problem. That was your problem. It wasn't the fact that you know, although again, if you're on the cloud, you know, that actually doesn't matter anymore. Because you don't have to trade the disc anymore. Your friend has it, you have it now.
Well, the problem is that once you give it to your friend,
your friend already has
it. Under the old plan, which is no longer relevant, but you gave it away to your friend, it would de-license it from you, it would license it to them, and then it was a one-time transfer.
But the thing is that you wouldn't have to deal with that because your friend would already have that copy no matter what. You wouldn't even have to give him the disc. The game is now his as well.
The game was now his, but it was a one-time transfer.
No,
he couldn't give it to anybody else.
No. And he couldn't give it back to you. Everybody on your friend list had it. The only stipulation is sort of like Steam, in which you can't play it at the same
time. You're talking about the family plan. If I added him to my family plan and he added me to his family plan, then we could share the game that way.
Yeah, but you can't
play it again. That whole family plan was all smoke and mirrors. Anyway, it was never fully fleshed out. They never said exactly how it was going to work. They killed it before they could get that far.
Yeah, I mean. Basically,
Microsoft had no intention of allowing one person to share a game with 10 people. They were never going to do that, Jonah.
Why? Anyways, we're not going to get into that. But the one thing that you can do now freely is rent games, and basically that was the only real hard and fast thing that was going to be affected is that you can no longer rent games, say like from GameFly. I mean, you could make the arguments either way about sharing and stuff like that, but the one thing you could not do was rent it.
That's correct. Renting wouldn't. They had no plan for a rental market, and they had no plan for loaning games. So it's a good thing that they eliminated that problem.
Anyways, we're incredibly boring people because they just heard us talk about this on the TV show.
It's been like a week since we talked about it, though. So,
no,
in fairness,
Thursday.
It's new to us. Oh, is it Thursday?
I don't remember. Thursday. Anyways,
it's been a long weekend for me.
Yeah, you got a job.
Well, my wife got a job. Well, I
you
moved.
Just shared photos of your nice new workplace with all those windows.
It's the same job. We're just in a new building.
Oh, okay. I cannot understand how IT could possibly work like that. I know you said, well, it gets dark. No, but the thing is that, you know, IT should be working in the dark. No direct sunlight, no direct anything, no windows, just artificial light. I mean, that's what went wrong with Ion Storm. Their workplace was too beautiful.
I did that, and I had vitamin D deficiency, so.
Yes. Jordan, I already know the answer to this because you just posted a review of it, but what have you been playing?
I finished Last of Us this weekend, and I also went back to the other dad simulator of the year, The Walking Dead. And
oh, wait, had you played it?
I have not finished The Walking Dead. I'm up to episode 4.
Oh, okay.
I need to finish The Walking Dead. I got the train started. I'm excited.
Yeah,
Now,
you were not as thrilled with The Last of Us as the rest of the internets were.
I was not as thrilled with The Last of Us as the rest of the internets were, and I think what it is that I draw the distinction between the story of the game and the actual play mechanics of the game. The story of the game, Last of Us, is fantastic. The artwork, the art direction, the sets are all fantastic. The problem is the game itself, the bit where the actual human player plays, is not that entertaining. It's very repetitive. Enemies are the same over and over and over again. And it just gets really old really quickly.
It sounds like you could remove The Last of Us and plop in Metal Gear Solid 4 into that statement. Except more.
I don't know about that. But the whole notion of playing a level where 60% of the screen is black, the only thing you can see is the 40% of the screen that's lit up by your flashlight. Is fine for one level, but having to do that over and over and over again and have it be more or less the same every single time gets really old.
You can use Batman's detective mode, can't you?
There is no detective mode. Well, there is a super hearing mode that you can turn on. And then you can, hunt people by the sounds that they make.
Yeah.
And if you power that up, by upping that skill tree, it lets you hear farther. But it's still kind of it's kind of old. And the game itself, it's too bad because the story is actually a very good story. If you watch the YouTube videos, it's a fantastic story to watch. It's just that the game part of it is not entertaining.
Well, I'm still doing my Mass Effect run through, and I'm now at the part of Mass Effect 3 in which I cured the Genophage, and I did it the Paragon way. And everybody who does it that way, they're tears. They're always tears because of a certain character sacrificing their life. I'm not going to say who because Jordan has not played it and he refuses to play it. Although, Jordan, maybe I should just get you somehow get you a copy with all the DLC attached just so you can stop whining about the demo.
I would play it for free. I'm just not going to spend money on something that I hated the minute I started looking at it.
Okay. So we're going to move on to this week's news, although some of it is last week's news. But this first item is this week's news. So go ahead, Jordan.
Game news. EA Soderlund states next-gen consoles should have come a year earlier. This comes to us from Strategy Informer. Electronic Arts executive VP Patrick Soderlund revealed in an interview he felt that the next-gen consoles, the Xbox One and PlayStation 4 in particular, were a year late in their launch. According to Soderlund, quote, "I guess we could have maybe been a year earlier with new consoles, but I think the reason why they lasted so long was because consumers told Microsoft, Sony, and others that what they had was sufficient for a long time. The delay in the release of the One and PS4 were the chief reason EA boss Frank Gibeau stated last year's E3 2012 that gamers were only seeing, quote, half the picture, but couldn't discuss next-gen systems. I mean, when you're in year 7 or 8 of a console generation and you know that new consoles are coming out, but you can't talk about them and you have to talk about the old stuff, of course it's frustrating. Now we can let everything go, which is a relief for sure," Soderlund related. He added, "So for sure, I think the cycle could have been a year shorter, but not necessarily. It now feels good that we get new stuff. The Xbox One and PlayStation 4 are expected to see release late in 2013.
So, do you think... I don't think consumers are saying we don't want a new console. I just think that they couldn't afford... Microsoft and Sony couldn't afford to release a new console last year.
I think that's part of it. I find it funny that he said that they couldn't talk about new stuff last year at E3 when they completely forgot about the Vita. The Vita was a new console. They could have very well talked about the Vita. And they chose not to.
The Wii U was a new console, no?
The Wii U was a new console, but you don't expect Microsoft or Sony to talk about the Wii U unless, you know, they're trashing it.
Well, the problem was that Sony didn't talk about the Vita either, so, you know, would you expect EA to?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it seems strange to me that, you know, they're really... You did have two consoles launch last year. You had the Vita and you had the Wii U. And they were, by and large, ignored. So I don't see how you can say that the console generation launched a year late.
Well, let me ask you a question. Suppose the Xbox One and the PS4 did debut last year, alongside the Wii U and alongside the Vita. I wonder if... I don't think they would have been ignored. I mean, there would have been a lot of...
If they had debuted last year, I don't think we would have seen the game lineup that we saw at this year's E3, and that would have been detrimental. Having a big show without the games to show for it is a problem. And waiting until this year and having the development time and being able to kick ass with your launch titles is a huge deal. And I think that worked in their favor.
Okay, so our next item is the Xbox One, PlayStation 4 premium games will cost $59.99. This comes to us from Polygon. When the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360 arrived and replaced their previous consoles, game prices went from $49.99, or $50 in real money counting, to $59.99, aka $60. Gamers need not fear such a price jump, as game prices will be remaining at $60 for the upcoming next-gen consoles. A Microsoft rep stated at the final day of E3 2013, "I can confirm that Microsoft Studio games on the Xbox One will be $60. Meanwhile, Jack Tretton had stated at the start of E3 that games from Sony would max out also at $60. Now, I guess that's it's pretty good news that we're not going to see it go to $70 for whatever reason.
Well, I think there's two weaselly parts of this story. The first weaselly part is Microsoft Studios saying their games aren't going to be more than $60. And the same thing from Sony saying, well, you know, our games aren't going to be more than $60. That has nothing to do with Ubisoft or EA or anybody else who's making games.
Don't the console manufacturers do get to regulate something about that, though?
They wouldn't be specifying their games, right? They would be saying all games on Xbox One. They wouldn't be saying Microsoft Studio games on Xbox One. The other part of it is that this is just the base price. If there's a AAA title, Halo 5, for example, you know there's going to be multiple special editions that are going to be $80, $100, $150. So, you know, that's where they're really going to make their money off these titles. Yes, the base price will be $60, but it will be up to however much people are willing to pay.
Forget the special editions. All you have to do is look at downloadable content. They don't need to raise the price. I mean,
absolutely. DLC always adds more content for a price as well. Absolutely.
Let's look at, say, Call of Duty Ghosts. Do you think it's going to be $60? Do you really think they're going to stop there and not charge $15 per DLC for more, which would be $60? Unless, of course, you get the online pass, then it's only $45, I think, or maybe $40. So you're saving, sort of.
Or you look at all the special editions for Assassin's Creed 3. How many of special editions do you think are going to exist of Assassin's Creed 4? And then there will be the retailer-specific versions. And, you know, this one comes with an action figure, and this one comes with something else. And
I don't care about that, because you had special editions. You know, the game that made special editions really, really popular was Diablo 2. That was way back in 2000.
I was just happy to get it in a steel case. That was the thing that excited me about most about the special editions. I wanted mine in a metal box.
Yeah, like mine. You know, I could also tell how much I'm sticking with an IP by the special editions I buy. For instance, when Gears of War 2 was announced, I didn't bother with the special edition, you know, that replica of the chain, whatever that thing is, that chain gun. I just bought the regular version, and that just told me, you know what, you're over Gears of War.
What are you going to do with a life-size replica of a chainsaw gun, really?
Well, then you see, Cliffy B? He always poses with that thing.
Yes, yeah, that's true. It's good for posing and not much else.
But, you know, I did get...
Then you got to figure out where you're going to put the thing, and yeah.
But when I get the Legendary Edition of Halo 3, well, that tells me, you know what, you really like Halo.
I got the Best Buy launch day version of Halo 3 that came with an inflatable chair.
Well,
mounted in the side.
You got it specifically for the chair, didn't you?
No, the chair. I didn't even know about the chair when I was going to Best Buy on launch day. They just went, "Hey, congratulations! You bought Halo 3. Here's a chair." I went, "Okay," and then went, "It has speakers in it." Okay, it's still in the box. I've never actually opened it.
But I, on the other hand, I still haven't.
It'll probably be a collectible if I leave it in the box.
I still haven't purchased Halo 4. I think it's because
I purchased Halo 4. I've not actually played Halo 4. I need to do that one of these days.
I just don't have enough time for.
I haven't played it all the way through. Yeah.
I just don't have time to play it, I guess. If I'm going to play a shooter, it's probably going to be on PC, which Microsoft doesn't want to hear. But then again, they already have my money for Xbox One.
I haven't put any money down on next-gen consoles yet, but I will be pre-ordering a PlayStation 4.
Well, guess what? You're going to be part of the second shipment then, aren't you?
Probably. I don't know. All I know is that I can get a PlayStation 4 and two games for the same price as Xbox
One. One of the reasons, by the way, I decided early on getting the Xbox One, pre-ordering the Xbox One, is because I was tired of always being, you know, oh, sorry, it's all sold out. You should have pre-ordered. So I said, screw it. This time I'm pre-ordering.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't know. Part of the enjoyment is getting in line at midnight. And
well, I'm going to have to get in line to get mine, too, you know. It's not.
I did that for the 360. I did that for the original Xbox. You know, got in line at 11 o'clock at night. And it's going to be interesting to see how it changes now that Microsoft has stores. I expect there will be people lined up outside the Microsoft store.
I tried lining up at midnight. There were none left by the time I got there. Okay? And I'm not going to camp out in front of a Best Buy for 48 hours waiting for an Xbox One or the Xbox 360. So, you know, at least that's the way it was back then.
You got to go to the less obvious stores. In the Northwest, there's a chain called Fred Meyer, which is a grocery store. They have an electronics department. I was number 8 in line for 10 machines at 11 o'clock at night.
Well, I went to Toys R Us because they overstock everything.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get a premium, but I got a basic and a hard drive, which is basically the same thing. You know, there was
exactly.
No difference.
Yeah. Yep.
The question is if I'm going to get a new Xbox 360 between now and then. Because, like I said, my hard drive on my 360 is tiny. On the other hand, I'm going to be getting an Xbox One. So it's like, which, you know.
Yeah, and you can just plug in a USB drive if you need more space.
Okay, so we're moving on to the next item.
EA's Star Wars licensing deal almost didn't happen. DICE pushed for Battlefront. This comes to us from CVG. EA Games label executive VP Patrick Soderlund said, hey, it's Patrick Soderlund again, said, quote, something as boring as resources and availability was keeping EA from signing for the Star Wars license with Disney. But then along came DICE. The studio practically demanded to know why they weren't talked to and that they want Battlefront. Soderlund admits you don't really tell them what to do over at DICE. Quote, it was almost not happening, admitted Soderlund. It was just something as boring as resources and availability. The DICE guys, Carl Magnus and Patrick, were talking, and I told them we were in dialogues with Disney over this deal, and they just looked at me and said, why haven't you spoken to us? What are you doing? We want to make Battlefront. DICE is a very particular place, and they're proud of what they do, and you don't really tell them what to do. I didn't anticipate them wanting to work on a license. They've always been new IP or their own IP, but they were just like, we would kill to make this game. And the whole studio started talking about it like, please give us this game. Soderlund added that the veterans in Sweden are behind Battlefront. Patrick Bach himself is on the development team. There are experienced DICE people in Sweden building this game. It's being built in Stockholm, he said. Added to the Star Wars dev list is BioWare, which is no surprise, but also Visceral Games.
Now, I just love it when a developer goes up to, which is essentially their boss, and says, we want to make this game. Stop f***ing around and let us make it. Just get the license done.
Make it happen. We don't care. Just make it happen. That's all we care about.
Because you know what happens in these kind of negotiations, you know? It always gets tripped up by some obscure financial detail like, oh, you know, well, if you're not going to give us 5% on in the U.S., then, you know, this isn't going to happen, that sort of thing. You know, it's just like, just cave in. This is going to make us money. Stop worrying about the percentages.
Or that they want a particular Metacritic score is the other part of it that is a fairly recent development.
Now, you have to wonder if this would have happened if a certain John Riccitiello was still CEO, because one of the things that DICE wanted and let EA know they wanted it enough times was Mirror's Edge 2. But
right.
Under Riccitiello, it wasn't happening. Now the Riccitiello doesn't come. Hey, guess what? Mirror's Edge 2 coming to you at a store near soon, sometime in 2015.
Is it that far out?
Well, the thing is, I don't even think they started development, because there was another article with Soderlund talking about Mirror's Edge, and it's Frank Gerbeau said that it was going to be an open world game, and Soderlund said, no, it may not be, you know. So they haven't, I don't think they've actually, you know, started on the game. They're probably still doing the design document. What do they want it to be, you know?
Yeah.
But hey, I know you like Mirror's Edge, or at least the iOS game.
The demo for Mirror's Edge, the first level is absolutely stellar. It's every level after the first level that kind of blows. The iOS version is fantastic. It's a 2D side scroller.
Yeah. By the way, another interesting thing is that Soderlund discussed Mirror's Edge 2 and said that the first one was not DICE's quote unquote true vision, which seems right. to tell me it was rushed. You know?
Well, I think there were issues in that, you know, Mirror's Edge had such a fantastic idea, the whole idea of the free running environment and all of that.
But also not only that, but also the look of it, in which everything's a pale cobalt blue, which makes those red things where you should go just jump out at you.
On the first level, yes. After that, you get into like the equivalent of sewer levels where everything is tight and claustrophobic and constrained, and it really killed the entire feel of the game.
Well, there was one scene in which, you know, you have to go inside a building and you find yourself wall running inside the building and ducking into ventilation ducts and just expertly avoiding everybody. And one of the things is when you watch speedrun videos of Mirror's Edge 2 in that particular level, it's like, geez Louise, how can you do it so fast?
Practice.
So,
also how you get to Carnegie Hall.
If you're going to do a Mirror's Edge 2 and it's going to be an open world, what I would like to see is that you have to get from point A to point B as fast as possible. That's the only way that could work, because if you have an open world in Mirror's Edge 2, it sort of defeats the purpose, doesn't it? You can just give everybody a wide berth. You know?
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it works out. I really hope it works out. I hope it doesn't get bogged down the way the first game did.
Now, getting back to the topic at hand, what do you think of the idea of Star? Now, I was at the EA's press briefing, right? And when that teaser for Star Wars Battlefront popped up, the entire place exploded.
I never played the Battlefront game, so I couldn't tell you. I'm more excited to the idea of involving BioWare and possibly getting a Knights of the Old Republic 3, finishing out that trilogy, or an HD remake of the first two and a completed version of the second game. That would be awesome, too.
What about a new Jedi Knight game?
Jedi Knight, I played the original first-person shooter.
You mean Dark Forces? You mean Dark Forces released in 1995?
Yeah,
when Kyle Katarn was not a Jedi.
it was okay. I mean, I don't play a lot of licensed games. The Knights of the Old Republic was an exception. But I would very much like to see I'd like to see BioWare do something more than the online version that kind of tanked.
Yeah. By the way, on a side note, my friend who is the marketing manager for LucasArts was finally let go last week. So
is that good news or bad news?
Well, it was inevitable news. I mean, LucasArts is dead.
right. That's
so
true.
So now that he's gone, that's it, you know. So we'll see what job he gets otherwise. Anyways, this next item just makes me giggle. Fish claims Fez 2 won't come to Xbox One due to anti-indie policy. And
anti-indie policy.
Yeah. Let's try that again. Fish claims Fez 2 won't come to Xbox One due to anti-independent game policy. This comes to us from Strategy Informer. Outspoken developer Phil Fish hasn't announced any platforms for Fez 2, but claims it probably won't be on the Xbox One because of their quote-unquote anti-indie policies, unquote. I would develop for the Xbone if they would let me, but they won't, the developer claimed on Twitter, adding, I would love to release my games on every platform, but Microsoft is making it impossible for me to release it on theirs. It's a shame. By the way, don't you love how Xbone has become the official nickname of the Xbox One?
I like Xbone. I like Xbox 180.
Yeah, I started calling it the One, just because it's slower, it's faster, you know. But
well, that's what Microsoft wants everybody to call it. Yeah.
Do they really?
I think so. You know, I mean,
remember they
the whole. The whole point of it is that it's an all-in-one solution. That's why they went with Xbox One.
I think they just wanted to call it the Xbox. But that was going to cause confusion. Not that it's causing isn't causing confusion now. Anyways, return
to Xbox Infinity is really the best choice.
Yeah, but you know that was the obvious choice, and we know Microsoft doesn't do obvious choices. I don't think it changes much for me, said Fish. They don't change anything about their anti-indie policies. With Microsoft, they made it painfully clear they don't want my ilk on their platform. I can't even self-publish there, whereas on the PS4, I can. It's that simple. Which is kind of odd because Fez debuted on Xbox Live Arcade and was an exclusive there for a couple of months. And what I think Phil Fish is saying, Microsoft, please give me money or else I'm just going to make a big stink and I'll put my game on the PS4 and you'll have a marketing hit.
I don't think that's it at all, because we saw the same complaint coming from Lorne Lanning over the whole Oddworld game, right? And his
same complaint from Happy Games, but there it goes. Their game Joe Danger appeared on Xbox Live Arcade, and they had a sequel which had exclusive content that wasn't in the PSN version, which outraged a lot of PS3 players. So
Lorne Lanning's complaint was that Microsoft wanted him to either publish through them or publish through another known publisher. They would not allow him to publish independently, and that's why his game's not coming to Xbox Live. He wants to publish it himself. Microsoft won't let him. They won't approve it for him to do it. They will force him to go through them or go through another platform, another publisher. So he said, fine, I'll just publish on the PlayStation profiles instead.
That doesn't tell us how Fez got there then. And by the way,
Fez is for the 360. He's talking about going forward.
No, but that's just it. Microsoft's
new policy for indie games is that it either comes out through Microsoft Studios or it comes out through a known publisher.
They were bitching about that before with the 360.
They will not allow you to do independent game publishing anymore.
They were bitching about that on the 360. And Microsoft's answer is, well, we have the Xbox Indie Game Channel. By the way, one of the interesting things is that I don't know if we covered this, but
it implies that the Indie Game Channel is going to go away on the Xbox.
What Microsoft said, and I guess we didn't discuss this, is that Xbox One games, Xbox Live Arcade games, and Xbox Indie games are going to be traded equally. They're going to be all in the same channel. which, you know, a lot of indie people were happy about this because they're in the same thing. But the thing I wonder is, okay, is it going to become like iTunes, in which you have a bunch of games and you have to wade through them? Although,
and it's impossible to find anything.
But
yeah.
I think Microsoft did say something about that as well in terms of, you know, in terms of easy finding stuff. I mean, you know, I mean, the indie game, the Xbox indie channel is where you find some really weird stuff. And I know we went on about that game, the childbirth.
There's a lot of bizarre stuff on the indie channel.
We went on about that one. And actually played it. It's kind of fun. Sick, but fun.
It's hilarious. It's hilarious and wrong.
But you know what? I like games that are hilarious and wrong.
Did you choose to do the one where you're actually squirting out your own avatar for distance?
No, I only played the original one.
Okay.
But but you know what? Z-Boid Games didn't have a problem with it either. I mean, they released Cthulhu Saves the World and Penny Arcade Adventures, an Xbox Live indie, which is really interesting because the Penny Arcade Adventure started off as an XBLA game, right?
Right.
With a quote-unquote publisher, although the publisher was Penny Arcade. I mean...
The Penny Arcade was like the developer. They published through... Who was it? Telltale? I think it was Telltale.
No, they didn't. No.
I'm pretty sure it came out through Telltale.
No, it didn't. But here's the thing is that the Part 3 and Part 4 came out in Xbox Live Indie, you know? And so there is... The thing is that... I mean, if he releases... Now, here's the thing. Imagine if they allow... if they have... the only difference between Xbox Live Indie games and Xbox Live Arcade games is one has to be between $1 and $5 and can't have achievements. And the other one can be $5 to $20 and does have achievements. And
Telltale, I'm looking at it now. Telltale did Penny Arcade and Strong Bad.
Oh, I know they did Strong Bad.
Yep.
But here's the thing is that I wonder if they're going to relax that rule. I think most people want from indie games is the achievements. They don't care about the price. They like the fact that it's not very expensive.
I tend to not be a fan of indie games. You know, Sony is really hyping the indie game channel for PlayStation Vita. And from what I'm seeing, it's a lot of games that look like crap. And...
Journey. I know you didn't like.
Well, Journey's not an indie game. Journey is on the PSN store, but is not an indie title.
Well, you're supposed to be that game company.
Well, I wouldn't consider that indie, but you know, Journey on disc in a store. Defeats the purpose of being an indie title
because there is this one developer, this one publisher who specifically targets indie games. Like, they targeted Terraria, they targeted, you know, Darwinia. They actually had, you know, they actually had, gave them the PC, these PC games, CD-ROM releases in stores. So, I don't know.
You know, most of the indie games I'm looking at are designed to look specifically like 8-bit games. And I'm sorry, but that generation was over 4 generations ago.
But you
move on.
But here's the thing. You know what's funny is that all these indie developers complain, but they all want it to be on Xbox Live Arcade. They treat PSN like sort of some sort of fallback. And I'm wondering if that's because people generally don't buy PSN games.
The PSN digital sales are actually phenomenal, so I don't see that being a problem. The change that Sony has made on their digital marketplace, making it possible for people to develop indie games for free, is a huge deal as well.
But you can do that on Xbox Live Indie Channel as well.
You can develop for free, yes. not according to the guy who developed Oddworld.
Xbox
you
can do that for free.
They're specifically preventing him from publishing. So
I don't think
that's the case.
The thing that he doesn't like is that the sale price on Xbox Live Indie games on Xbox, you know, is capped at $5. That's what he's complaining about. Because Xbox Live Indie Channel, all you need is XNA. That's all you need, and you can put it on Xbox Live Indie Channels. The only thing you have to make sure, you actually have to rate those games yourself, by the way, on the level of sex, level of violence, and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
which is, you know, that's really a that's really going by the honor system there, you know. Anyways, but the thing is that
seriously, you need to read some articles on why the Oddworld stuff is not coming to Xbox Live, because it doesn't sound to me like you know exactly what's going on there. And it's fascinating to read the internal workings of the way Xbox Live works.
Okay, let's get
and they're driving developers away.
Let's talk about Phil Fish for a second, because he got himself in a lot of trouble by saying Japanese games suck, and he got attacked from all quarters on that one. And as a guy in his mid-20s, he's got to learn, shut up, just shut up, stop, you know, because, you know, the people you meet on your way up, you're going to meet them on your way down, you know?
Right.
That's the one thing that he has to learn. You just can't talk, and expect, you know. So, moving to E3, one of the things we discussed last week was the games that impressed us. Now, So, Jordan, you were not at E3, obviously, but...
I had to work.
What?
Yep. I had to work.
But from afar, what game impressed you the most?
The one that was not at any of the big conferences, and it was Capcom's Deep Down. The dragon fighting simulator looks freaking amazing. And I don't know if, you know, unless you saw Capcom's conference or somebody pointed you to a YouTube video, you'd never know that game existed at E3, but it looks freaking amazing.
Now, Capcom had to reassure everybody it was not Dragon's Dogma 2.
It is not Dragon's Dogma 2. It looks completely unlike any game I've seen. It looks like something out of a movie.
It looks like Dark Souls, though.
It does kind of look like Dark Souls. You know, the dragon effect and the flame effect is just amazing.
Yeah, but so this game, by the way, is one of Capcom's rare original IPs. They're not very big on new IPs. I mean, yes, there's Dragon's Dogma, but basically they're Mega Man and
Street Fighter, and
love to recycle their stuff. But so, you know, what else impressed you? Okay, yes, I know which one's the next one you're going to talk about.
Having
to do with Bungie.
Oh yeah.
Destiny.
Yeah. Destiny looks fantastic. I like the idea. Well, you know, it's a next gen game from Bungie, and
it's a Borderlands MMO, really.
it does have a Borderlands component to it, where you're, you know, getting loot and upgrading your weapons and stuff like that.
But one thing I do like about it, though,
the drop in online team play is very cool as well, and I think that's going to be a game changer for consoles, just like online co-op was a big deal. I think this will be the next big deal for online gaming on consoles.
And of course, one of the things I really don't like about Borderlands, and with me, you know, I started playing Borderlands 2 because I got a review code, and it's like, I can't do this, you know, because one of the things I hate having to do is having to level up your ability to aim, and that's not what happens in Destiny. It isn't you who levels up; it's your weaponry that levels up, and you know, you get a hot new, I guess, purple weapon, you know, which is my code, which is code for rare weapon. And you see, you get its little tech tree, you know. Oh, if I level up, this is what it can do as it goes along.
Right. And that looks very cool. I think your character levels up as well. I mean, there's character stats in addition to the weapon
stats.
Yeah,
but you can always aim at what you're shooting at. That's one thing that, you know, you have to understand. If you're going to do something as a shooter, don't make it so that you can't aim. That's annoying. It's not, you know, just let people aim where they want and just affect other stuff. The other thing, when I went to the demo, the private demo for press for Destiny, the land itself looks incredible. And you have this lush land that goes for on and on and on. And they said, you know what? That's not a skybox. That is, if you see it out there, you can travel there. The graphics, the environmental graphics look even more amazing.
Yeah, it really does look like a top-notch game. I would say clearly a day one purchase for anybody, and it's going to be multi-platform. So whether you have a PS4 or an Xbox One, you'll be set.
And by the way, this is what the cloud was made for. You know, both. And by the way, I love how Sony keeps on saying, "We have a cloud too." you know, because everybody's focusing on Microsoft's cloud. Sony has to say, we have a cloud too, you know. But this is the sort of game that the cloud was basically made for. Because this will allow people to get instantaneous updates and all that stuff from the cloud, because you're playing the game, right? But a lot of it is stuck in the cloud, so you won't have load screens. You won't have, you know, you won't have the typical things that just screw up an open world experience. Which is also why you can have such high level of graphics. Of course, last but not least, when I was watching the demo, the little AI was voiced by Peter Dinklage. And for those of you who don't know who Peter Dinklage is, you probably know him from Game of Thrones. He's the little guy. I forgot the character's name.
Tyrion
Lannister.
Yeah. So, and he really is a great voice actor. Aside from being, you know, just a great actor, he you know, it's very rare for a voice actor to be that at home. I mean, a regular actor to be that at home doing, you know, because his vocal work had such flow to it, you know. Yeah. I think that's part Bungie as well, because you have to have the characters. But you know, you've seen where some games where you have celebrity voice actors and they sound like robots, you know, because they're not quite sure what to do. So, I mean, did you listen to Peter Dinklage in the gameplay video? Did they have?
I didn't. It didn't immediately occur to me that that was Peter Dinklage, but okay. Yeah, I watched the demo. Yeah.
Okay, so I have two games to show. Now, one of them, you know, from me, is Titanfall. It is basically, it's sort of like Call of Duty with mechs, but the action is so fluid, you know, and it's an online-only shooter, and this will probably be the first Call of Duty I've played, or it's not Call of Duty. Keep forgetting that. It's being developed by Respawn, which was founded by Jason West and Vincent Zampella. The guys who left Infinity Ward because they felt Activision was screwing them over. They went to EA, and they started working on this game for the past 2 years, 3 years. They've been with Activision for 3 years. 2 years of it was working on this game. The first year was basically doing design documents and stuff. So, have you seen videos from Titanfall?
Yes, I have. It looks very impressive.
Yeah. And the thing is, it makes you feel like you're in a real battle, because one thing I didn't like about Destiny, because it felt a little antiseptic, Titanfall puts you in the muck. You know, people firing around you. You can hear – the sound is some of the best sound I've heard. But that should be expected, by the way, from guys who did Call of Duty, you know, because their big thing was always been sound. But in this, you know, you have the grinding of gears. You have pebbles being flung around when ordnance hits it. It just feels so, you know, gritty. On the other hand, you have wall running and you have double jumps because of the jetpack. So yeah.
Yeah, it could be very interesting. I'm not a fan of the military shooters, so the Call of Duties, the Battlefronts, and all of that stuff is kind of lost on
me. These are giant robots.
I prefer a sci-fi element to my shooters, and so, you know, that's why I like Halo so much, and that's why I like Gears of War so much. So, you know, this is...
You have giant robots.
This is right up my alley, yes.
Giant robots are the new black. I mean, everything has giant robots.
Giant robots are going to be huge this year. Have you seen the previews for that new Pacific Rim? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, everything is giant robots. So maybe we'll have a video game adaptation of Robot Jocks.
It's been a long time since we've had a mech-based combat game. You know, the Mech Warriors.
Mech Warrior Online was released this past year.
Steel Battalion and all of that. It's been a long time.
You have Hawken coming out. Well, Hawken is already out. Hawken, Mech Warrior Online. You even have Mech Warrior Tactics, which is a strategy game. And we discussed this in the Aborted podcast, but remember really playing Battletech on the Amiga?
Oh, yeah.
That was great.
Phoenix Squadron or something like that.
Yeah. The other game was a game I found out about after E3. And after I saw videos of it, my jaw dropped. And that is Tom Clancy's The Division. Have you heard of this game?
The Division looks very, very impressive. And that's one of the surprises. Before E3, we talked about, you know, what are you looking forward to at E3? And my answer is, I'm looking forward to stuff I haven't already heard about. And The Division was one of those things.
I mean, I saw The Division and I said, I want to play this game right now.
I have not really been interested in a Tom Clancy game since the original Splinter Cell.
But this one is a science fiction concept again.
And it is a science fiction.
What's really
again.
Refreshing is that this is a game in which you have people who are infected But they're not zombies. They're basically doing, it's more realistic in which society has collapsed and people have, there's a pandemic. People have just gone batshit crazy because there's no, it's anarchy, you know, and you're
Madagascar has sealed its borders.
Basically. And the other surprise game that no one saw coming was Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare. And what it is basically Plants vs. Zombies meets Battlefield. And you know what? A lot of people would hear that. If they heard that concept and didn't see the video, they would have said, that sounds so stupid. And it's just
I would say it's more like Plants vs. Zombies crossed with Team Fortress 2.
That too. But yeah, I guess. But it's running on the Frostbite 3 engine, which is hilarious and unto itself. So, but that is a game I'm really looking forward to, and it's going to be an XBLA game, you know, and a PSN game and a PC game before it moves on to next gen, you know, Xbox One and PS4. So it's not a huge, huge game. So from what I understand, it's going to be a $15 game.
It depends for me on the levels and stuff and how in-depth and how big a game it is. You know, if it's just the same levels over and over again, or if it's just multiplayer over and over again, that's not going to
interest me. They have all these scenarios. And the thing is that if you've played the new Facebook Plants vs. Zombies game, they actually preview all the levels that are going to be in that game. Like you have the junkyard level, you have the home level, you have this level, you have that level. So yeah, and you also get to fight the zombie boss at some point apparently. Which for those of you who don't know, if you played Plants vs. Zombies, that's that it's mad scientist in a gigantic robot that covers most of the screen.
Another giant robot.
Yeah, but this one came before. You know, I'm just a little bit disappointed that they haven't announced Plants vs. Zombies 2 yet for consoles and PC. It's still iOS only. But, you know, I'm patient. I can wait. So, of the games that you saw at E3, which one were you most meh about?
Well, where do I start? The worst one clearly was the one that they had a special announcement for the Vita just before Xbox reveal. And I can't even remember the name of it, Destiny's or other, but it looked terrible. It looked like a cell phone game. There was no actual character animation. The characters were static images that just moved forwards and backwards. It was embarrassing to show something like that. Mm. And then Sony went and included it as part of their conference to talk about what great stuff is coming out for the Vita, and it just looks terrible.
However, one thing we can say about the Vita is that I did get to play around with, I forgot the name of it, Tearaway.
Tearaway.
Yeah. And it's very basic, you know, but you know what? It looks beautiful, and sometimes you need very basic to succeed.
There are some extended gameplay videos of Tearaway out there on YouTube, and it really just looks fantastic. And the idea of the rear touch screen and being able to poke it and move the landscape around is a very cool idea.
Yeah. So for me, I guess it would be I don't want to say Destiny because the thing is that Destiny didn't hit me as hard as I thought it might. You know, I watched the demo and I said, okay, it's good. I guess it's one of those games which I have to actually start playing it in order to really appreciate it. I know you were entranced by it. Me, not so much. But you know what? It's Bungie. I'm pretty sure it's going to be high quality anyway. I just expected them to blow my socks out of the water like The Division and Titanfall did.
I would like to add one other category besides the ones we like the most and dislike the most. The one that surprised me the most was the trailer for Beyond Two Souls, because we thought we knew what Beyond Two Souls was going to be. It was kind of a, you know, presented as a Alan Wake-ish, you know, girl with a shadow monster in the Pacific Northwest. And they come out with a new trailer and she's being trained in boot camp and sent to Afghanistan to go kill some dude. And, you know, it completely turned my expectations of the game on its head.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean good. It just means it's on its head.
It doesn't mean good. It doesn't mean bad. It's just I was surprised at the direction that they took this kind of you know, Twin Peaks-ish type game and turned it into a desert warfare military type game. So now I have no idea what to expect from the game.
I guess I can just say Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare was the one that surprised me the most. I mean, of all the things that Telltale would do, that was the thing that was furthest from my mind. A third-person shooter starring Plants.
Third-person shooter. But squad-based, class-based shooter.
I will say this. Zombies. I did an interview with the producer, and they did a lot of work to get those 2D characters into 3D and make them look like the 2D characters, still have the same charm, but be in 3D.
Oh yeah, it looks fantastic. It really does for Plants vs. Zombies.
Yeah. Anyways, we're gonna move on to reader feedback.
We're not gonna do the two articles at the end, I'm assuming.
Well, no. Those two articles were just there to remind us what we... Okay, the two articles that were there were rumor Microsoft to work on offline gameplay for Xbox One. Well, guess what? They worked on it. Two, publishers received cut of Xbox One pre-owned sales at retail. I think that might be out. And
yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
But you called it unnatural, by the way. You said, you can't do that. You can't share profits like that. That's communist talk. You can't.
I used the phrase communist talk, but yeah,
socialism.
It was a violation of the first sale principle. Yes.
Well, guess what? This is a whole new generation, babe. Okay, we're gonna move on to listener. We're moving on to listener feedback. Go ahead, Jordan.
From Hair Alien, commenting on episode 312. Pactor predicts $349 for PS4, $399 for Xbox One. Interesting. I don't see this happening, though. The hardware behind them is basically identical, and for the same stuff, Sony has a history of running higher prices.
Well, we know that's not true.
Well, we already know Pactor was wrong again.
But wait, before you move on, there was a price expert who said that Microsoft's $499 was too high. But I also heard something else from some knowledgeable people who've watched this sort of stuff. And they said that, in the electronics industry, we tend to buy the higher priced thing for the most part because it's better. TVs and stuff like that. If you're going to spend $400, why not go to $500? I know a lot of people don't think that way. And, basically have two different consoles which do different things or somewhat different things.
Everybody knows the price of a Kinect is $100. So, looking at a console that's $500 and it includes a Kinect, people are automatically going to do the math in their head and go, oh, well, the console is the same price as a PS4, but I get a Kinect for $100 more.
Oh, by the way, and I found something else interesting about Kinect, the Kinect 2.0, and that is the Xbox One has three separate processors. One is for the Xbox One. The other one is for the Kinect, and the other one is for Smart Glass. So what happens is that what that says is that when Kinect is going and Smart Glass are going, they are not draining from the main processing power of the Xbox One. They have their own thing going on.
Well, and Smart Glass has whatever chip is in the tablet that you're using to connect to Smart Glass.
By the way, the other game that really surprised me, and I was really impressed by that, I wasn't expected to be impressed by, wasn't a game at all. It was sort of a game, and that's Project Spark. And I'm really looking forward to that.
Project Spark could be interesting.
Yeah, well, it's a free-to-play game in which you can make games. And I'd like to see what people come up with a year after it's released.
That's true. A lot of people did some very interesting things with Little Big Planet.
Yeah.
At World of Warcraft movie, sigh, why the hell not? I've seen Mario, Prince of Persia, so why the heck not? I mean, it'll have a ton of CGI, so it doesn't really matter the origins of the story or script. For all it's worth being made after WoW, it will most likely be used as a marketing tool to get more people into the cinema.
I think less people liked Super Mario after Super Mario Brothers came out with John Leguizamo and Bob Hoskins. I think that drove people away.
At Robert Bowling's Robotaki raided by LAPD, mistake Call of Duty figure as armed intruder. Really? I blame the dev who pressed the panic button. Jonah Ghost is wielding an M4 with an M203 underbarrel grenade launcher and a red dot reflex sight. Not sure what to make of the sound suppressor, though.
I don't know how he knows all that.
Some people love their guns. At Documentary Seats seeks to unearth 3.5 million ET cartridges from landfill. Waste of time if you ask me, but hey, they have money to spend. The contractor has people to pay. That's true. Hey, jobs. At Oculus Rift developer Andrew Scott Reese, 33, killed as bystander in police chase. Manslaughter, that'll be the verdict. As for Andrew Scott Reese, RIP.
Well,
I agree.
If you're in a police chase and you run someone over, that might actually be upgraded to aggravated manslaughter.
That might actually be considered murder, depending on, you know, second degree murder. You didn't intend to kill them, but you ended up killing them anyway.
Or in the commission of a crime.
In the commission of a crime, exactly.
Yeah.
At Shadow of the Eternals Kickstarter fundraising struggle. So I remember that at one point we were wondering when we'll get the first failure on Kickstarter. Now, if I remember correctly, what we wanted was a project to meet the goals but then not deliver. This one doesn't quite meet the requirements, but still it's the first project that could fail while still being under the spotlight.
Well, as we all know, they backed out and they stopped it. And oh, by the way, another game, Heavy Gear Assault, also quit its Kickstarter because it only raised $45,000 out of $900,000. However, what developers have started doing is they've started doing their own crowdfunding on their own sites. And the reason why Heavy Gear Assault stopped is because they raised $120,000 on their own. So, you know, it's I think what's going to happen is that major developers who want to do big projects are going to test the waters with Kickstarter, but then do their own crowdfunding. And Star Citizen, which made its Kickstarter fund with $2 million, it raised $7 million on its own. You know, it's made more money on its own than it did on Kickstarter. Of course, it made its Kickstarter goal, but still. By the way, are you interested in Star Citizen? I mean, it's being done by Chris Roberts, who did Wing Commander, and because we haven't had space combat simulation.
What is it called?
Star Citizen.
Haven't heard of it.
I'm very excited for it.
Okay, Jordan, if you liked Wing Commander, boom. That's what Star Citizen is. Okay, so this comes from Arthur V, also from episode 312 at EEE. Didn't watch any conferences. They were all some awkward time. 12 p.m. Pacific. Ugh, damn it. At EEE. Now, by the way, Arthur actually posted his comment a couple of days ago. So this is all after Microsoft's about face and stuff like that, which is going to be evident in his next thing. But at EEE. Oh, E3. Okay, I get it. Didn't watch any at conferences. They were all at some awkward time. 12 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time is the worst time to have any conference. It's the middle of the night in Japan and workday in the U.S. and U.K. Only suitable for Chinese, where consoles are banned. Regardless, the news was all right. It's surprising to see the console battle so one-sided. PS4 definitely plowed Microsoft. I'm genuinely surprised to say this, but Sony seems to have learned from its mistakes and is doing what the gamers want, as opposed to Microsoft, whose vision of the living room seems to be inconsistent with our own. That said, I'll probably be getting a PS4 on release, that and Battlefield. Glad to see some very good MMOs are coming to consoles. Now, one thing that we did not mention is that right after Microsoft did its own, turned around and did it, there was a huge swing of Xbox One pre-orders. And I think the last barrier there is going to be the price. So I wouldn't be surprised if Microsoft announces its subsidy like in July or August.
Well, there are rumors of stuff coming out in August because of Gamescom,
yeah.
Right?
And
so if anything is going to come out in August, it will be at Gamescom.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one thing that everybody is expecting Microsoft to announce at their conference was the subsidy, right? And I think, and this is my prediction for the subsidy, if they do it at launch, $300 and 1 year of monthly installments of Xbox Live at $15 a month. And I think $15 is the magic number, because that's usually when you have a subscription MMO, that's what they charge, is $15 a month. You know, so I think that might be the number, because it's $300, it's low, and you're not committed for a very long time. However, Microsoft does make a profit, a big profit on that. I think they would make a $100 profit on if they sold it at that, if they had the subscription at that rate. At the Xbox 180, composed the post above a week ago. So much has changed. I've never seen Microsoft so humbled in its entire existence. Bill Gates is rotating in his grave, and he isn't even dead yet. From one side, they slap themselves in the face hard by going back on their vision of the living room. On the other hand, it speaks volumes that they take the PS4 as a serious threat and as a more appealing console, which means they still have time to get things right. Still, I'm set on the PS4 and will eventually get an Xbox once the price is right. By the way, Jordan, one of the important things that we've not really mentioned is the fact that both Microsoft and Sony are going to be supporting last-gen consoles for some time.
Well, that's what they say, but you know, whether they will actually, you know, it'll probably be a nominal kind of support, the same way that the original Xbox and PS2 hung around, but there weren't really many new games. You know, EA was doing their annual football game for the PS2, but there really wasn't anything besides that.
But what we do know is that Sony has another SKU of the PS3 coming out. We know that because there's a new serial number, right? Which sort of tells me it's going to be a larger hard drive.
Slimmer case, larger drive, some combination of the two, something like that.
Microsoft has announced their new 360, and the thing that bothers me is it's the same price and has less features. Not a good combination.
The thing that really seems to bother people about the new 360 design is that it does not include a digital out.
You have the
HDMI out, but you have no digital audio out.
And it's the same size as the current Slim.
Yes.
You know, at least, and the thing is, the Slim actually looks slimmer because it has a little hourglass shape.
But they did that cool half glossy, half matte look that the PS4 and Xbox One do.
Screw that. I'm gonna get the Slim and not the Super Slim, and it's not even a Super Slim. moving on.
I don't have that comment.
That's me. At Wii U, I am currently taking bets on the Wii U collapses before the core Nintendo title sell. I'm currently taking bets on if the Wii U collapses before the core Nintendo titles come out. Since my Love Film subscription ran out, I haven't even touched the thing, and I'm not really planning on doing it anytime soon. I am tired of Nintendo feeding me promises. P.S. I love the fact that Microsoft is ripping off PlayStation Plus, but considering that the first two games available are Halo 3 and Assassin's Creed 2 are a joke, here in the UK, Halo 3 costs a pound, and practically every person who owns it at Xbox has it. Now, here's the big difference between the two. If you stop your PSN Plus account, the games that you get for free go away. You can't play them
correct.
Anymore.
That's correct.
To keep them. So you have to balance that out. Now, on the other hand, the games that you get on discount on PSN Plus, you do keep. But the thing is, Microsoft has deals all the time as well. I mean, if you go to Major Nelson's site, you see a lot of the deals. So it balances out, and you know, the thing is that I might actually get Halo 3 for one reason, even though I already own it. It's an all digital version, so I don't have to pop in the disc.
That's not a good enough reason for me to get a game I already own.
Oh, I mean, I already have Xbox Live Gold, so it's an easy decision for me. Just like it was an easy decision for me to buy Alpha Protocol on PC for $1.99 on Steam, even though I had two copies of it. Don't ask me how I have two copies of it. I lost one and I bought the other one on eBay. But I bought it for $1.99 because it's on Steam. No matter where I go, I'll have it and I don't have to pop in a disc. It's worth $2. You know?
Because it's so exhausting putting in a disc.
No, it's so exhausting having to look for the disc. I lost the disc?
What bookshelves are for?
Yeah, I still lost it, and now I don't have to deal with it. You know, it's $2. It's either do that or get half a cheesecake at a restaurant. Guess which one lasts longer? Okay, and we're moving on to the next item. Go ahead, Jordan.
From Alpha Shard, commenting on episode 313, which was the outtake episode where we had a discussion of Doctor Who
Game
of Thrones and Doctor Who and all of that good stuff. Didn't we have a Doctor Who episode where River Song regenerated into her current form in front of him and then proceeded to try to kill him? Unless she gets a mind wipe shortly after this, I don't see them repeating this. Actually, yes, she did. River Song was kidnapped as a baby and brainwashed into being the assassin tool to kill the Doctor. She regenerated and tried to kill him, I believe, in the episode Let's Kill Hitler. And after that, we still met her again. So, yeah, that was not, you know, the beginning of River Song. We're still waiting for the episode where River Song does not know who the Doctor is. And that's going to be the end of the final episode for River Song.
And if I remember, you and Paul were split on this. Paul did not want to see that episode. He thought it would be cheesy.
I want to see it. I think it'll be heartbreaking, not cheesy.
Well, he thought it would be. I don't know if he said cheesy, but he said it would ruin it somehow.
The first River Song was the one where the Doctor had no clue who she was, and she's like, "Please tell me you know who I am. Please tell me you know who I am." And he was like, "No, sorry, who are you again?" And so that was, we need the other bookend to that story so that she has a complete arc. Otherwise, there's no point to even having River Song.
So our question of the week is, what game at E3 impressed you the most? And guess what? We're doing a contest. And we're doing an E3-related contest. And it's an E3-related contest. I am giving away a free Titanfall T-shirt.
Yay, T-shirt.
Yes, it's an actual Titanfall T-shirt from E3. It is a large size only, I believe. So if you're extra large or extra, extra large, don't. Or at least if you won't be able to wear it, just give it to a friend who's a gamer. So
don't they know who gamers are? What are they doing producing large size T-shirts? Seriously. Seriously.
You know what? Seriously. At PAX East, I bought an extra, extra, extra large T-shirt for PAX East. Even though it'd be sort of like a dress on me. Because, you know, I like sometimes wearing really loose shirts that I can just flow in, you know? Just because sometimes you just need to
hang. Sometimes you need extra room to, you know, tuck things up.
No, not tuck. It's just that, you know, sometimes you just don't want a tight shirt, you know? You just want something that's nice and billowy that blouses on you. Anyway, that's the question of the week. What game
are you saying you prefer shirts that you can flounce about in? Is that where we're going with this?
Yes.
You're a flouncer?
Blouse, flounce, whatever. So the question of the
I just like the word flounce. I'm sorry, flounce.
So the question of the week is, what game at E3 impressed you the most? So look for our show notes at Gaming Podcast Net, along with our industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or at the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum, or send us your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news and Paul Lund's review of The Last of Us at gamestooge.com. And for the record, Jordan gave it. Did I say it was Paul's review?
I said Paul Lund, yes. Oh, it was a mix.
So, yeah, if you have a kid, that's going to be the kid's name, I guess, in honor of Paul, even though he's not dead. You can also check out our gaming news at GameStooge.com, along with Jordan Lund's review of The Last of Us. And for the record, Jordan gave it a 4 out of 5 stars. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. So, yeah, go ahead and read Jordan's review. And he actually goes into depth why he's not marching in the Last of Us is the best game of the year. It's a 10.
There are no spoilers, but I will say that it is not a contender for the game of the year, unfortunately. I wanted to like it more than I actually liked it.
Yeah. So anyway,
BioShock Infinite appears to be the game to beat this year.
BioShock Infinite? I'm not a huge fan of BioShock Infinite either. I don't think my game of the year has popped up yet.
Well, we'll see. You know, there's going to be a whole bunch of launch titles, so yeah.
Yeah, but what are the launch titles going to be? That's the one thing Forza is going to be one of the launch titles. And by the way,
Watch Dogs.
Metal Gear Solid 5.
I don't know if Metal Gear Solid 5 is a launch title or not.
It's not.
It is.
Well, the thing is that the game that I'm probably going to be, the first game I'm going to probably be getting with the Xbox One is probably going to be Forza. Because we didn't mention this during our E3 games thing, but the one cool thing about Forza is that it remembers how you drive. And it showed you how it's thinking. Okay, he took the slight turn in this position. Oh, and he tried to gun ahead here. And one of the things
I don't want a game that learns how I drive.
Well, the thing is that the reason why it learns how you drive is that people will be able – your car will be driving other people's cars as part of the cloud. And if you're an aggressive asshole driver who likes to crash into other people and force them off the road, your car is going to be really quote-unquote popular. They'll be talking about you throughout Xbox Live. Oh, please.
I don't want my car doing stuff when I'm not at home. I just think that's wrong.
It's the beginning
that's sick and wrong. Games that play themselves. What's the point?
It's Skynet. They you know, and by the way, Kinect knows what you look like.
Do not want.
Kinect knows what you look like. And when you boot up the Xbox One, it'll say, "Hello, Jordan." And you know, for
do not want.
You know, and for bonus points, they should do it like mother from Alien, you know, or some or Hal, you know, sort of like, "Hello, Jordan. Would you like to play a game?"
Me, Earl Grey, hot.
No, actually, if it's going to ask you if you want to play a game, it should be, shall we play a game?
And Jordan's going to answer, let's play Global Thermonuclear War, and then say, strange game.
The winning move is not to play.
Wouldn't you prefer a nice game of chess?
How about a nice game of solitaire?